you think your background in a more closed, more formalist approach served as a really good foundation for you to begin to appreciate Black Mountain and to begin to incorporate that?
Oh, I think that's, it's implicit in what I'm saying. Yeah, it did. It gave me a real appreciation of what they were doing, what Black Mountain and Olson were doing, because they came out of the same bowl, the same cauldron that I did earlier, about 20, 30 years earlier, right? It's essentially how it worked.
You were able to get a real sense of the contrast because you knew the closed and the more formal approach.
That's all I knew.
And then you get this, and it's like...
So what happened in Taos in 1989, just by chance, through an acquaintance, said, oh, you got to see this. You're a poet. You publish. In fact, she had published some of my stuff in the magazine. I think it was Hispanic magazine.
Who is that?
Maria Alvarez, the editor of the National Hispanic Magazine. And she had had me do some reviews of poetry books by Urrea and a couple other Hispanic poets, because she knows a poet. And then I was out here and she said, oh, you got to see the circus. So I said, oh, yeah, of course. So I went, changed everything. It was at that point that I said, well, you know, I got to get out of D.C., because not only did I see the circus operating here, but I also saw New Mexico as an opportunity for poetry in general, because there was so much stuff going on. Santa Fe, there was a lot of poetry. I think probably more in Santa Fe and Taos happened poetry-wise in a month than a whole year in D.C. So that's one of the reasons I came out. And the other reason was that I could get a job, because I can do what I do anywhere. Community development, legislation, consulting to local governments, and legislative proposals. And stuff. You can do that in any state, anywhere you go, in the United States. But so that was what I got. I got a great jobs that I could do out of my hip pocket. And I think I did a reading within a month of being in New Mexico. I was doing a number of readings and with poets that I essentially just encountered intentionally through getting involved in the poetry community, and that's when they said, you know, you got to meet Peter. And that's when I was taken up to meet Peter.
And you're taken up to meet Peter Rabbit, the founder of the...
Oh, I had no idea who he was. I didn't even know it was he that was running the circus when I first saw it, which was... See, this was 91. This was 3 years earlier, probably. I didn't even know that that's who he was. That was the master of ceremonies.
You met him... You met him 3 years? I'm trying to...
No, I didn't meet anybody. I just went...
You went to the circus.
I was just an attendant. I just paid a ticket and went.
3 years later, you meet Peter Rabbit.
3 years later, I was introduced by John Canole, who I had been doing some readings with. I hooked up with him and we did a couple of readings in Santa Fe. And he said, oh, you got to meet Peter Rabbit. So he brought me up, and that's the day I met Peter, was when he was shot.
So there's a story. Meeting Peter Rabbit. I met him the day he was shot.
Yeah, I mean,
that's not the...
He was shot in a hunting accident. Yeah, he was out getting a Christmas tree. I had no knowledge of who he was. I didn't even know that he was the guy that was running the circus 3 years earlier and was emceeing the bout that I saw when I met him. I just knew that this guy wanted to meet him. And John Canole is still a practicing poet in New Mexico. I went to one of his readings of last fall in Santa Fe at the Gerald Peters Gallery with John Macker, who was out of Naropa. So John Canole is connected. He's like this little facilitator for me.
And you're meeting Peter Rabbit. You're in a hospital room, and you're smoking dope.
Yeah, that was my first meeting. The minute I met him, I was handed a joint in Holy Cross Hospital room. In the hospital room, and there were five people standing around his bed. and he had his leg up in a sling with pins coming out of it. They had already operated, put his bones back together with pins, and it was laid up there. He was talking as if this was what he did normally. He conducted a psychedelic seminar in the hospital. He didn't look like he was in pain. He didn't, everybody was talking. And they weren't necessarily talking about his wound. Talking about everything, poetry, everything else, stuff like getting everything high, yeah, you know. Not about getting high. No, it was about whatever was going on. I think they were planning another circus at the time. If I recall, they were talking about who was going to be the headlining the 1992 circus.
And Ann Waldman would, of course, be defending her crown.
No, that was, this was 3 years later, and I didn't think she was defending that year.
Yeah.
But I met her many times because she would come as a guest. She did come and defend once, but she also was featured another time.
Oh, that's right. She lost to N. Tozake Shange.
Yeah, she lost to, that's the one I saw. That was a good one.
So you mentioned as a sidebar going to D.C., before Taos, and working with Cesar Chavez.
I was working with Cesar Chavez immediately coming out of Irvine. He recruited me, which is a whole other story. But suffice it to say, I was encouraged to volunteer with the farm workers by my second wife at the time, under duress. You know, you come and help or else. Or I can't remember how it was put. So I went out and I began volunteering. And that became something really important to me when I encountered the type of racism that you encounter when you're being an activist for a minority. All of my other experience was rather privileged because I was just doing my poetry work. And I was isolated and academic and ivory tower and very, very out of the loop in terms of politics. I had no politics. So, 1977, I get out of Irvine. I am immediately, well, it was a plan. Cesar had asked me if I could help run the Farm Worker Education Center at La Paz once I graduated. I said, sure. So that was my plan. And I went to work for him from 77, 78, 79 and ran the Farm Worker Education Center in which we were teaching farm worker leadership that Cesar had selected in the management and implementation of the Agricultural Labor Relations Act, which had just been passed under Jerry Brown. So there I was teaching because I had 2 degrees, I had a BA and an MFA, but I had no background in labor relations or labor history or anything like that because it had been, my education had been largely artistic, an English major and academic history, not political history. Religious history, not political economics. Mm-hmm. So Cesar tweaked my worldview and my experience, I'd say 90 degrees. And I became very involved in farm worker activity. I learned how to lobby. I learned legislative activity. I learned organizing. I worked on several political campaigns for him during that time. And I ran the school.
How many years? 8 years with Cesar Chavez?
No, it was only a year and a half. It didn't last that long because my wife got ill and didn't get along with the farm worker staff or family. The farm workers was a very, how would you say it, communal, closed community of committed activists who worked essentially for nothing. I got a check for $32 every 2 weeks, so I made about 64 actual dollars in cash.
1977.
Every month. But of course, the farm workers provided housing, food, transportation. They had a fleet of cars. If you needed a car, just go get one, you know. They weren't great cars, but they were cars. And it was 24/7 work all the time. And, you know, I did a lot of different things. I learned so much. It was just really amazing that he taught, what he taught me. And when I left, I had my politics for the rest of my life.
Left wing, pro-union.
Well, yeah. I mean, just teaching the kids at the farm worker guys. Yeah, I mean, they weren't kids. Some of them were 30, 40 years old. Some of them were young. But he brought in CIO leaders, AFL leaders. He brought in political economists and labor history guys from Berkeley and UCLA, you know, and I would have these guys as guests. So, oh, so and so's coming. Oh, shit, this is his book. Okay, I got to read the book. It was a good thing I had a lot of academic experience so I could read and try to catch. I was never fully caught up ever. I was always behind. I felt always behind the eight ball there. But I certainly learned labor history and the Wobblies and the WWs and the, oh boy, and the whole sordid American history of corporate capitalist
fascism.
Domination. Yeah, well, yeah, of course, yeah. And so when I got out, I had a transition period where I was a community organizer in Santa Ana, a suburb of L.A., but it was just not satisfying, so I took a Ph.D., I got into the PhD program. I got another Regents Fellowship. go figure. Somebody said, "Hey, Amalia, they're looking for." I said, "Well, sure." So, I did 3 years of PhD where I did all my academic work and my thesis for a PhD, but I never completed it because I ended up going to Washington.
Where was this?
Irvine
again, yeah.
But I worked at the history department. I was working under the leftists there, John Wiener, Spencer Olin, they brought in Perry Anderson from England. They brought in, what's his name? Aronowitz from New York, Columbia. Major American Marxists. And boy, did I really fill in
some of the gaps.
Well, all of the theoretical background that I lacked when I was teaching the farm workers, I was getting the activists and the labor relations people that had actually been in the
trenches.
In the trenches. And when I went to Irvine for the PhD, I was getting all the theoretical background to what these guys were doing. And in a Marxist PhD program, you have to read Marx, you have to read Weber, you have to read all the major social theorists and be conversant in the contrasts and the facets that they bring to the dialogue and the dialectic about political economy. So it was another huge education. So I was just being packed with just assimilating a lot of information. Mm-hmm. But then my marriage was falling apart. And my second wife was really, I think, ill. It was nothing I could do about it. She was mentally ill. And I took the Congressional Fellowship as a way of getting out of that. So I got a Congressional Hispanic Caucus Fellowship and went to D.C.